Visionaries Global Media, envisioning excellence on a global scale.
Hey guys, Chris here, and welcome to another episode of Chris Talks Games. As always, I'm Chris, and I will be talking about games with you guys. So yeah, let's get started for another session. So, good start off as always with the news. Okay, first up is a bit of Persona news. The Persona series, so it's its 25th anniversary coming up. So, Atlus and Sega have made an announcement they will be releasing numerous projects over the, like, between fall or autumn 2021 and autumn 2022, so there's going to be some more Persona announcements coming up. Not purely about games, it will be the stuff outside games, like maybe merch stuff or maybe animes or cartoons and stuff like that. Well, people are quite excited about what this could mean for the games, though. So in the last year, Atlus and Sega did port Persona 4 Golden onto PC and Steam. It did do really well, and it seems to surprise Sega and Atlus. So it's where they do take some of the older games and move those across to more consoles. Give you a chance to see Persona 5 go to other consoles and Persona 5 Royal. A lot of people are saying they could get Persona 3 and Persona 4, bring them over to other consoles. I think they will look at other consoles apart from PlayStation as well. So obviously the move to PC did do pretty well for Sega and Atlus, so I think they will probably look to that. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see exactly what they do show off as part of the 25th anniversary, but they have announced there are several things coming up, so and whether we get a proper announcement of Persona 6, like, are they going to show off the follow-up to Persona 5? That'd be interesting to see what they do there, if they do show anything off for that. But yeah, from this autumn, it'll be interesting to see what is announced in the Persona series. Next up bit of news is Nintendo. Nintendo were kind of absent from last week's episode, really, but they did have quite a big bit of news drop in the last couple of weeks. They have announced their new Switch model. A lot of people were expecting a Switch Pro, which would be 4K, improved screen, and loads of other stuff. And what got announced was the Switch OLED model, or OLED model. And it underwhelmed quite a few people, I think, because a lot of people were thinking, oh, it's going to be like 4K on TV, it's going to be like 4K dark, it's going to be so many different changes. But it is a fairly basic compared to people's expectations update. The big thing is it has got an OLED or OLED screen on it. And it is slightly bigger, it's a 7-inch OLED screen. But the actual unit doesn't say change size, it's literally just they got rid of the bezel around the screen. So the screen hasn't got such a big buzzer around it. And they have doubled the internal memory, so it's 64 GB instead of 32. They have made some changes to the dock. They've got small ventilation on the dock, and they've replaced one of the USB ports on the back with an Ethernet port, so you can plug a internet cable straight into the Switch dock. To give yourself a more secure online connection. I know it's something, especially with Smash Brothers, I do recommend having an Ethernet connection. There's two colours of the OLED. It's going to come with a white dock and Joy-Cons, or black dock and the neon, red and neon blue Joy-Cons. so it's going to be fairly Yeah, fairly light in terms of specific upgrades, but they have got the new screen, the new dock. And they have said that the stuff's interchangeable, so you can use the new dock for the old Switch and the new Switch in the old dock. That is interchangeable. That's not something that you need to take into account. It is launching 8th of October, which is alongside Metroid Dread, so should be another boost for Metroid Dread as well, launching alongside the new console. Shouldn't pick up a new game and a new Switch console on day one. Yeah, that'd be interesting to see how well that does, really. has had a slight price increase, so it is $350 in the States. I haven't really seen pricing in the UK yet, so can't say how that relates over here. Yeah, it's gone up to $350 in America, in the US. Some people are saying it seems to be a big increase, especially when someone costed out the changes, and it works out like it costs Nintendo $10 more to make the system, and they've put a $50 upgrade on it. So it should be interesting to see how well that goes down and how well it picks up. But yeah, that is due out on the 8th of October. For people expecting a Switch Pro, it was a bit underwhelming. A lot of people thinking Nintendo would go further than it did. But they have just done a new screen, a bit more memory. And they made a couple of adjustments to the dock and the new colour scheme with the white Joy-Con. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how well it does pick up. I know internet scalpers seem to be getting on the action already. They've posted some on eBay and they are getting quite a bit of money for some of the ones on there. Even though the pre-orders haven't officially gone live. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see exactly how in demand they are when they come out in October. Last bit of news, we're going to look at EA, because EA have officially announced FIFA 2022. Unexpected, or like kind of expected news, like FIFA comes around every year. Just like usual, EA can't resist a bit of controversy. Most games offer you like a way to upgrade the game to the PlayStation 5 or Series S or X. FIFA are doing it, but they're locking it behind a certain edition of the game. So where normally most games will charge you $10, I think, especially on the PlayStation systems. They charge you $10 to upgrade. Or some third-party companies do just straight up upgrade, give you the upgrade. If you've got the disc, you can put it in the Xbox Series X or PS5 and you'll download the upgrade patch. This year, EA have done it by having various different versions of the game. And if you haven't got a PS5 or Series S or X and you want to upgrade the game, you basically can't do it unless you buy the Ultimate Edition. The Ultimate Edition is gives you about $100. Again, I don't know how much that is in pounds, probably about £90, I think. So that will be a lot of money. One of the features is that you can get a free upgrade between the PS4 and PS5 or Xbox One and Xbox Series S and X versions. There's no plans to have it available separately. It caused a bit of response online. A lot of people weren't impressed with it. Why can't you just pay the $10 if you want to upgrade? Otherwise, if you got PS5 or Xbox Series S or X, you'd still be paying the PS4 or Xbox One versions on your next gen consoles when you get the next gen console. A lot of people, whether there's a time limit on the upgrade as well. So I know FIFA 21, They did do a free upgrade path, but it had to be done by a certain point of time. At a certain date, you had to upgrade the game by. Even with the Ultimate Edition, it'd be interesting to see if there is a time limit attached to it. And again, as always, the Switch version doesn't seem like it's going to be worth getting, because it will be another Legacy version, so it is just an upgrade of kits, squads and stadium. It will be at its lower price point. It is like, I think it's supposed to be about £10 cheaper in the UK and $10 cheaper in the US. But again, it is just pure laziness. It doesn't have half the career stuff. It is just literally last year's game, but with squads updated and kits updated. I think it's a bit of a shame. I think if they put a bit of effort into the Switch version, they will find it sells really well. But yeah, it is just a case that EA are doing the bare minimum on the Switch, like the just really bare minimum. I know last year there's one website that literally copied and pasted their review from the year before, because that's what EA had done with the game. They literally list the same game, just the updates. It could have literally been done in a DLC patch or an update patch. So yeah, it is a bit of a interesting situation with that. Yeah, that is EA and FIFA for you, really, unfortunately. Anyway, that is our headlines done, and now on to the main section of the show. Okay, so we are going to launch into the main subject for today's show, and probably will carry over to the next episode. Basically, we have there is a common conception that films based on video games are awful, so I'm kind of looking at it from the game perspective, so good look at games based on films and how they fare, really. So kind of going to break it down to two kind of sections. So this episode we're going to look at when it's not gone right, like the worst games based on films, and the next episode I'll switch it and look at the good games based on films, basically. Yeah, because obviously with the announcement of the new Avatar game from Ubisoft, the fact that there's an Indiana Jones game in the works from Bethesda, yeah, kind of taking those into account, like, game and film tie-ins is still a big thing. Granted, you don't tend to see the amount of games based on films that you used to. Like, it used to be every big film had a game based around it. Especially the Disney stuff, used to always have a game accompanying Disney films, especially stuff like Meet the Robinsons, Tarzan. So yeah, I'm going to kind of look into that kind of genre and see how games fare and which ones are good and which ones didn't quite make the cut. So, like I said, this episode we are going to be looking at the games that aren't so good. So yeah, let's get going. And before we start talking about specific games, I'd kind of give my thoughts on why I think some games based on films do tend to be a bit ropey. Because there are some that are just seen as cash-ins and they're not great games. A lot of it comes down to the fact that they kind of need to be released similar time to the film is. So, got that time pressure of getting the game complete by the time the film comes out. Obviously, that can be quite tough if your development isn't going to plan or if you hit a problem. And you've got this date to hit, you can't really ask them to postpone the game or push the film back because the game's not ready. So yeah, I think they are really kind of pushed for time in terms of getting them out. And they do sometimes take the quick and easy route. They do like the collect form platformers or fairly basic games sometimes, just because it's to do with the time they got to develop it. And basically just get something out, really, I think. There are games based on films that are just seen as a cash-in. Let's get extra money from this new film franchise or this established film franchise. So yeah, it is an interesting one there. We're going to start talking about some specific games, and I think Disney was quite a big culprit for kind of being seen as a cash-in one. So I don't think the games were terrible per se, but they were kind of fairly basic and kind of collect-a-thons. One that springs to mind is Meet the Robinsons. I played that as literally just run around, do things not related to the film in any way, and just collecting stuff. There were glitches, there were some issues here and there with it. That was one that I wouldn't say is terrible, but it does stand out as like a bit of a cash grab. Unfortunately. But yeah, in terms of worst games based on films, the Jurassic Park series has fared interestingly. Like, you've had some better ones recently, but if you go back to the 90s when the games first came out, there were some pretty bad ones. Quite a notorious one is Jurassic Park Trespasser. It's almost up there with the Atari version of E.T., which we will cover later on, in terms of its notoriety. I think when they announced the game and started showing it off, they promised it would revolutionise gaming, had like big names attached, like Steven Spielberg and Richard Attenborough attached to it. And it was really ambitious in all the ways it probably shouldn't have been, really. So basically, back in 1998, they were trying to go for quite realistic in the way that no games had really done it. But what actually got released was like a drop-in-stuff simulator. So basically, you play the character of Van, who had the he went around with a steel rod to hit dinosaurs with. But the physics are really wrong, so if you kind of you bumped into a wall or something hit you, you drop everything you're holding. But it did get bad reception for quite a few reasons. So it was like poor voice acting. The landscapes were pretty generic in general, and the puzzles weren't very exciting. It just wasn't what was promised. I think it was quite a big kind of letdown for what people were expecting from the game. Similarly, you got Lost World Jurassic Park as well. Another game which didn't do great. It's obviously got to play as T-Rex sometimes in the game. But they said that the controls were awful, they were really unresponsive, and literally jumping onto a platform was really difficult. The developers also made it quite a challenging game, so it's pretty brutal with what you can do. The game had 30 levels, but no save point at any point, so you had to literally do it in all one setting. So obviously you could have had save points because you had the memory cards for the PlayStation. It's just like also just didn't deliver on the expectations or what could be with a Jurassic Park game. Another one I'm going to mention is Catwoman in 2004. But basically, Catwoman got a lot of criticism for being very generic. And basically, the game gave you the option of running between two legs and four legs. The attack was really inaccurate. It was actually just very, very repetitive. Nothing exciting or no changes in the game. Like, it's actually, you'd handle every boss and every bad guy exactly the same way. Although one thing that people did like is that they had Jennifer Hale voice in Catwoman, who a lot of people said was really well done. a lot of people are saying it's probably due to Halle Berry turning her back on the franchise. So yeah, Catwoman is very generic, very repetitive, and just difficult attack controls. So it wasn't done particularly well. That's what I'm going to talk about is the Harry Potter series. I know the games were quite hit and miss. You had some good ones and others not quite so good. The ones that are being called out in particular by a lot of people are the Deathly Hallows games, parts 1 and 2. The series games have varying quality. Some are quite good, some are not. But Deathly Hallows games are considered among the worst of the series. The actual gameplay was just a mixture of Gears of War and Grand Theft Auto. It's kind of really weird combo. And a lot of people didn't like the fact that they did mess with the story. Storytelling was canon breaking and just the cutscenes didn't look great at all. Across both games, the AI was picked out as a really bad point as well. It was repetitive, not smart AI at all. And the enemy design is literally looked like you were fighting the same three people again and again and again. One review said that the game had a lack of coherent story, despite being based on one of the best-selling books of all time. Essentially went for an action game, didn't follow or care about the story, really. It is kind of surprising that a game that's based on a film and a book kind of deviates so much from story and doesn't focus on story. It's kind of interesting to see how that happened, and especially quite a big franchise like Harry Potter. But you think towards the end of how well the games are doing, probably think it might have just been a cash grab. So let's do something different with the games, and then people still buy it, but it just didn't come across as well as it should have done. One game I'm going to mention is Spider-Man 3 from 2007. Spider-Man 2 video game was, until the more recent Spider-Man game on PS4, Spider-Man 2 was considered one of the best Spider-Man games of all time. Spider-Man 3 isn't particularly a bad game, but I think after Spider-Man 2, it just really let a lot of people down. It seems to have taken a step backwards and featured so many glitches that sometimes ruin the gameplay. There are glitches where citizens would literally just walk through buildings. Voice acting was really spotty. And Spider-Man's crypts was really frustrating. And even the cutscenes just weren't good. They just didn't look great. It's just, I think Spider-Man 3 is probably more of a disappointment rather than being a bad game as such, but especially coming after Spider-Man 2, it had a tough act to follow. Transformers had a game based on the Transformers film. But it's basically very much a point of very generic, very repetitive, no real change in the what happens in the film, in the game, sorry. So just you drive into a place, drive to another place, going place to place. The graphics weren't great for the time, and the mechanics as well, like, a lot of people say the controls were just really fiddly and awkward. Especially with a game where you spend quite a lot of time driving around. Basically, they did also deviate from the plot as well for the film. They codifies the original loosely, but derails it at random points to try and insert some different kind of gameplay bits. So most of the changes have you destroying cities and destroying areas to complete that mission. Even though the point of the Autobots is to protect humans from the Decepticons, it just seems to have taken a back seat in these sections. So Transformers game just seemed a bit weird. The controls weren't great. In terms of games that didn't live up to their promise, you got Aliens Colonial Marines, or Colonial Marines. Meant to take place after Aliens 3. And the first announcement and the first kind of gameplay looked amazing for it. A lot of people were really excited for the game, and then when it came out, it just really let people down. Like, it came to us having some of the worst AI ever seen in a game. I'm saying the Xenomorphs literally walk straight past you. Things where characters and enemies would freeze midair or get stuck in the ceilings. It's just really kind of strange and not great. And also kind of let itself down the story. There's a very brief campaign mode and quite a shadow part that is played quite loose with the canon. And moving on to the next one is 007 Legends, which came out in 2012. Obviously, GoldenEye is one of the iconic games based on a film. It's well revered. It's a pioneer in the first-person shooter market. 007 Legends was a game that tried to tie all the Bond movies together in a journey. And so basically went across multiple films, heavily relying on nostalgia. What happened is you end up with a fairly generic shooter, really. Kind of didn't deliver on a lot of the big set pieces and moments, and kind of tried to use Call of Duty's combat system. It just felt stale, like it was nothing new, quite repetitive. It was literally the same thing, was just to blast through the enemies. It was repetitive missions the whole time, unfortunately. What was we going to talk about? So what we are going to talk about next is a game that has gone down as legend, pretty much. It is the E.T. game, E.T. the Extraterrestrial. This is the ultimate example of a game based on a film that's not worked. It's one of the first video game tie-ins ever made. And they put the game together in just over 5 weeks, so it could come out in time for Christmas. So literally they gave the developers 5 weeks to try and make this game. Okay, it's on the Atari, so it's not a modern day game where it takes months and months to work on the graphics and the kind of graphics engine and how the game works and the mechanics and the physics. But still, 5 weeks is a very, very tall order. So it looked awful even for 1982, so didn't look good. Very repetitive tasks, and most of the gameplay involved like trying to avoid holes but falling into them. It basically came one of the most reviled games at the time. It is actually credited for pushing Atari into debt, and is credited for causing the 1983 video game crash. Yeah, the stocks in the video game industry dropped massively, and the E.T. extraterrestrial game is one of the factors thought to be involved in that. It's actually rumoured that they made so many copies of the game that, because they didn't sell them, they literally buried somewhere in a desert in America. And that is just kind of goes to show how bad the situation was. For a game to literally be credited as a cause of a massive industry crash, takes some doing. I don't think it'll, another game and film tie-in would ever kind of achieve that. It was a pretty expensive mistake, pretty expensive failure. And again, it goes to show with time limits, trying to get stuff out for a certain date. Because legitimately, giving someone five weeks to put a game together, I don't think you get a good game regardless, unfortunately. It will be a lot of copy and paste and redoing stuff you've already done kind of thing. Is it fair that you got such a bad rep? Possibly, but just, it's not a good look for Atari and the E.T. brand, really. There are some other mentions we got, so obviously, a lot of people thought the Thor game tie-in, which came out in 2011, was pretty awesome. And pretty much it turned into a one-button mashing game. It got buggy controls and, literally you spam the attack button and run around. So it's very kind of disappointing. So that's some games based on films which are kind of not so great, not so hot. I'm sure there's plenty others which haven't lived up to their expectation or their promise. Like I say, it's a genre that isn't as big at the moment. You got the Lego games based on certain film franchises, which seem to be doing pretty well. In terms of actual film tie-ins, they're not as prevalent as they used to be. It'd be interesting. It looks like they are moving away from the games based on films genre. And the big exceptions are the Star Wars, which is getting quite a few games here and there. Obviously, Indiana Jones and Avatar are getting games coming out. Like I say, next week I will kind of look more into the games based on films that did well, so games based on films which are really well liked and been successful. It kind of wraps up my look at bad games based on films. So now to let you know what I've been playing the last couple of weeks, and where to find me and what's coming up. So last couple of weeks been playing a bit of Tetris 99, Animal Crossing as always, because checking on those, doing the daily tasks, daily challenges on Tetris. I've been playing some Smash Brothers. Me and Matt from the Game Junkies podcast have been doing some verses on Smash Brothers, a bit of Mario Golf, dipped into Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2 HD. Also been checking some more stuff out on Game Pass, dipped back into Sunset Overdrive. I've downloaded Minecraft, I haven't loaded it up yet, but obviously I've not really got into the Minecraft, so we can see if I can give it a go and see if I can understand the craze behind Minecraft properly. I've also done depends on time of the game, build a garage demo, which is on the Nintendo eShop. It's a really cool way of teaching people how to develop games. Does seem a bit oversimplified, so very much like they're aiming it at younger people, because you are getting the same point repeated again and again and again. Which is good, because it kind of does help things sticking in mind, but at the same time it is a little frustrating and timed. But yeah, it is pretty good though. What else have been playing? That's about it really. It's Mario Golf. Really enjoying that so far. Hoping to do another gameplay video, because more of the story mode. That's what I've been playing. Obviously, don't forget to check out Matt, Alex and Kerry on the Game Junkies podcast next weekend. I know they've recorded their show already. They're well prepared this time round. Focusing on D&D this time. And also, they have got the Dungeons and Junkies podcast as well. I've been getting... I got involved with some of the Junkies, Dungeons and Junkies. I've got one shot. I might show up elsewhere, so... always fun to get involved with that. You can find me on Twitter at ChrisLewis37. And my YouTube channel is ChrisReactor. I do show my YouTube videos straight onto my Twitter. So if you want to find my YouTube channel, best thing is to find me on Twitter. And the stuff's right there. Thank you for listening. If you still are, guys. Until next time, stay safe, enjoy some gaming, and speak to you soon. Bye.
This podcast is a Matt Attack production for Visionaries Global Media.